in which we review economic cognitive dissonance. We talk about the business of the USPS and zippers. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Wednesday today, the 12th day of August. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Some related but cognitively dissonant economic facts as we get going today. One, there is still no movement toward an economic support package on Capitol Hill. Two, the three major stock indexes have, as of today, erased almost all of their pandemic-related losses. And three, bankruptcies are up 27% in this economy so far this year over the same period in 2019 to a level we have not seen since the Great Recession. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman gets us going with a reading of the bankruptcy code tea leaves.
When the pandemic hit in March, bankruptcies kept ambling along pretty much like in 2019. Slow and steady, says Chris Hudgens, who crunches the numbers at S&P Global Market Intelligence.
And even into April and May, we were still pretty much what you would expect during the normal course of the year.
Companies were still managing to pay the bills in the midst of stay-at-home orders. But then,
in June and July, we saw this large spike in bankruptcies, which is about a 30% increase.
They were concentrated in retail and energy. Now, this analysis covers pretty big companies with millions in assets and liabilities. Small to medium-sized businesses appear to be doing worse, says economist Dan North at Euler Hermes North America.
We think for the whole year, business bankruptcies are going to be up around 47%.
Euler Hermes is in the business of insuring companies for payments they're expecting, say from the customers they ship products to. When those customers are late or in default, Dan North says it's often because they're heading for bankruptcy.
If you're Walmart, a large company, you've got a buffer. The average small business has a 27-day cash buffer. Business gets shut down 27 days to survive.
As the economy continues to struggle, a lot of small businesses might just throw in the towel. They won't show up as bankruptcies. They'll just turn into zombie companies. No employees or sales, not contributing to the economy anymore. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
We are now 12 days into the month of August in this fifth month of this pandemic, and early data suggests the number of people who can't pay their rent is climbing. In the first week of August, Apartment List found that about a third of Americans had yet to make their full payment, and the numbers are even worse in apartments that serve low and middle-income renters. And that hurts both renters and landlords, yes. But as Marketplace's Amy Scott reports, the economic fallout from the pandemic could do lasting damage to the actual supply of affordable housing.
Christopher Wallace is still collecting this month's rent for the hundreds of apartments his firm manages in Washington, D.C., and he isn't optimistic.
Since this all started in March, it's been progressively getting a little worse.
Wallace, with Fred A. Smith Management, says late or skipped payments aren't the only problem.
I think a lot of people, if they're unable to pay, what they're doing is moving out and moving either back home or moving in with other people.
Most of Wallace's buildings are known as Class C properties. They're older, have fewer amenities, and tend to serve lower-income tenants. Rochelle Bayless is with the insurance company LeaseLock, which found that by mid-July, owners of Class C buildings had collected only 37% of rent, down from 54% in mid-June.
Those groups of people who are most affected by unemployment and layoffs, it's the same population who are also residents of Class C apartments.
And when they can't pay, their landlords may have to sell or face foreclosure. Jenny Schutz with the Brookings Institution says that could permanently reduce the stock of affordable housing. Investors could swoop in, renovate, and raise the rent, or
if the landlord isn't collecting rent, they can't do things like fix the plumbing and fix the roof. Some of these buildings just may become uninhabitable.
The need for affordable housing was already dire before this crisis. And once it's gone, Schutz says, it's hard to replace. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, it's almost like the pandemic isn't even happening, you know? We'll have the details when we do the numbers. We've spoken a good deal about what this pandemic has done to clothing sales and to clothing retailers, one bankruptcy after another, Brooks Brothers, Neiman Marcus, J. Crew, and the parent companies of Men's Warehouse and Ann Taylor. But it's not just those big companies that are struggling or dying, in fact. There is a downstream effect all through the supply chain, as Marketplace's Mariel Segarra reports.
There are so many parts that go into one item of clothing. Kathleen Argiro is a fashion designer in New York who makes evening dresses.
Each one is like a little house. You know, you have like the main fabric, and then you might have so if it's like a strapless dress, an inside corset, so you need boning and lining, and you need a zipper, and you need thread.
And you need suppliers to sell you all those things. The problem for Argiro and her many suppliers?
We make evening wear. People aren't running around in evening dresses right now.
Demand is down, which means clothing makers won't need to buy many zippers or fabric pieces anytime in the foreseeable future. David German runs the zipper and thread supplier, AGH Trim Source, in New York City. He sells to Argiro.
Everybody's been massively affected. Our biggest season would be fall and holiday, and we missed out on both of those.
And the pain just trickles down, because AGH has suppliers too, like the Japanese manufacturing company, YKK, which you probably know from those letters on all of your zippers. Seriously, look closely.
YKK stands for Yoshida Kogyo Kawashiki Kaisha, but you can't fit that on a zipper, so.
Jim Reed is president of YKK Corporation of America. He says business is down between 30 and 60% from before the pandemic, and suppliers like his are often the last to bounce back. It's like a train.
You know, where the engine starts and then you hear the clanging down the line of all the train cars.
There's a train car behind YKK, too. The companies that sell it raw materials like plastic and metal. I'm Mariel Segarra for Marketplace.
Inflation in this economy is a little more alive than it's been of late. The Consumer Price Index is what I'm talking about, came out this morning. It was up a bit in July, 0.6%, to be exact, month on month. That was gas prices, mostly. Consumer spending is going up, too. Slowly, yes, but it's going up. But given everything that has happened this year, how we are spending has changed. And here's what some of our regulars are noticing.
Hi, this is Shudipto Chatterjee from the San Francisco Bay Area. A number of local gyms are closed at the moment, and people have shifted to online classes using weights and equipment at home. So all of a sudden, the prices of these weights, even secondhand ones on Craigslist, have gone up a lot. My wife and I decided to buy a set of dumbbells and kettlebells recently, and they cost almost double per pound of weight if you buy them from the local store, compared to ordering them online from a Chinese retailer. We bought local since A, we needed them immediately, and B, we want to support local businesses.
This is Ellen Murphy at home in Mission Hills, Kansas. We have a new tradition since the quarantine took effect. We replaced our Saturday evening dates when we would go to a movie and then go get a pizza with making pizza on our grill. Even though this makes the pizza more expensive, when you consider that we cancel our family vacation and a couple of long weekend trips to Northern California, it probably works out economically to make pizza at home.
This is Kelly Koletsky in Columbus, Ohio. At one point, I was considering making a few purchases for my home, considering that, you know, I've been spending so much time there. But just recently, the organization I work for has undergone, you know, a significant budget constraints due to the coronavirus. And as a result, we've undergone a reduction in pay for at least a year. So I'm only buying what I need and just foregoing things that I would like to have.
My name is Kaya Price Dennis. I'm calling from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Here, food prices are going down, finally. They're not as high as they were a month and a half, 2 months ago. My part-time job, I shop for people who order their groceries online at a local grocery store chain here. And I've noticed that families are baking more and making more Sunday-like dinners. So I'm happy to see that families are doing things together, but I'm saddened that it took COVID-19 for us to find productive ways to be together.
That was In Order Sudipta Chatterjee. He's outside San Francisco. Ellen Murphy's at home, not traveling, in Mission Hills, Kansas. Kelly Kaleski's in Columbus, Ohio. Kaya Price Dennis in Pittsburgh, PA. Coming up,
we're seeing subsidence, which is when the ground settles and literally drops.
Well, that can't be good, huh? First, though, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is up 289 points today, 1%, 27,976 for the blue chips. The NASDAQ added 229 points, about 2.1%, 11,012. I was a little bit out of the loop today. The S&P 500 picked up 46 points, 1.3%, 33.80. That, by the way, is just 5 points shy of the all-time high back in February in the before times. So, how did some big names in tech do the day after one of their senators was picked by Vice President Biden, huh? Facebook picked up about 1.4% today. Apple gained 3.3%, getting close to $2 trillion in market capitalization. That company is Google, added 1.8%. You're listening to Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Gusto. Let your employees know you've got their back by signing up for Gusto for payroll and HR. More than 300,000 small business owners use Gusto. They offer benefits like health insurance, employee onboarding, and more. Get your payroll taxes filed, deductions calculated, and your team paid fast. No more pain. Just the joy of running your business. Get 3 months free when you go to gusto.com/marketplace. That's gusto.com/marketplace.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. President Trump's handpicked Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy is his name, has been in the job a little bit less than 2 months. But the changes he's making have already started to affect delivery, as in it's slower. And there is, yes, a political side to this story, with vote by mail looking to be a big part of the presidential election this fall. And that is a big, big deal. But along with Postmaster General, DeJoy is also the post office's first ever CEO. And as such, with mail delivery slowing and private competitors capitalizing, the post office could be facing a workforce problem. From the Workplace Culture Desk, Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has that story.
Mark Dimenstein, now the president of the American Postal Workers Union, worked as a clerk for the Postal Service for more than two decades. He says the job afforded his family of five a comfortable life.
You know, we had vacation time, and we had some money to be able to take vacations. I've never met anybody that says, geez, I wish I had never been a postal worker.
These are solid middle-class jobs, and they have been for quite a while.
Monique Morrissey with the Economic Policy Institute says these union career jobs have historically provided more opportunities for veterans and Black workers who are overrepresented among its workforce. Most private competitors to USPS are less generous with pay and benefits. While UPS has a unionized workforce, FedEx has long relied on contractors and subcontractors for its ground deliveries. David Weil, a labor market expert at Brandeis, says that pushes wages and benefits down.
Every time you shift down who's responsible to one more level, you're creating another level of a business that has to make a margin.
Weil points to one private equity analysis that found FedEx workers earned 40% less than their postal service counterparts. The same analysis found Amazon is taking the model to an extreme, using a network of gig workers to deliver packages whose net earnings are sometimes below minimum wage. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
China is going to have a record number of college graduates this year, almost 9 million of them, straight into the teeth of a pandemic. Past the peak over there, to be sure, but pandemic nonetheless. To make sure there are enough jobs, the Chinese Communist Party has ordered government departments and the army and state-owned companies to recruit more graduates, and it's even offered subsidies to private companies for hires that they make. And there are some less conventional methods, as Marketplace's Jennifer Pack reports.
Job hunting is about to start in earnest for Qiu Chuangjia, who graduated in visual communications back in June. Right now, he spends his days reading, playing video games, and once in a while writing a blog on WeChat, the app for everything in China. His last post got about a dozen views, 3 likes, and no advertisers. Incredibly, having a registered WeChat blog means he can officially be considered employed.
Who knew opening a WeChat blog could be considered employment? I mean, seriously?
Yes, seriously. The Chinese Education Ministry recently added more job categories for graduates to embrace the gig economy, says this local TV report.
According to the Education Ministry, graduates who open an online shop, register for a WeChat blog account, or play competitive esports will also be counted as self-employed.
The news has been widely mocked. Already, elite colleges report that nearly all their students find jobs right after graduation. Misconstruing employment data in that way is a problem, says China's education ministry, and it pledges to tackle such dodgy dealings. Take the case of Lily Zhang, who graduated from a top college in June. As she was leaving, she says she had to fill out a so-called employment destination form.
One of the options on the form was freelance. Our counselor asked if he could write I was a blogger, and I refused because I don't intend to be one.
Such forms, according to local media, have in the past been used by colleges to inflate their employment rates. Behind the rosy statistics is a harsh reality. Graduates are having a hard time finding work, and the COVID-19 pandemic made things worse. On a lunch break from his job at an educational consultancy, recent graduate Tony Lin says he was lucky to find employment, but it wasn't easy. Many companies had a hiring freeze at the start of the pandemic. Tony almost wiped out his savings as he waited it out. And he says, compared to last year, salaries are lower.
I know for a fact they are lower.
By about percentage-wise, do you know?
1K per month.
That's $1,700 less annually. And although Tony found a job, his girlfriend, Wendy Wan, wasn't so lucky, even though both of them have highly coveted master's degrees from the UK. At her apartment, Wendy is clear on why she hasn't found a job. She's too shy to speak English, there's too much competition, and she believes she got bad education advice.
I wanted to study in Japan and upgrade my technical school diploma to a bachelor's degree. But then an education agent told my father that in the UK, I could get a master's degree fast within a year.
She says her father thought the higher the degree, the better. Didn't work out that way. Apparently, jumping from a diploma to a master's degree is just not done in China's system, says Wendy.
I got some job interviews because I have a master's degree. But when employers saw that I had a diploma and not an undergraduate degree, they stopped talking to me.
As for Lily Zhang, she's applied for more than 100 jobs and is about to sign an employment contract. She's upbeat about her future.
A person's future depends on him or herself and not the economic environment.
Her advice to the graduating class of 2020, hang in there. In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
When you go to the grocery store in this country, pretty much anywhere in this country, most of the fresh stuff, the fruits and the vegetables and the meats, it comes from just two places, California's Central Valley or the Corn Belt of the Midwest. But with a change in climate and the way Big Ag does business, our food supply might not be completely sustainable. Tom Philpott covers food and agriculture for Mother Jones. He's just got a new book out, too, about that. It's called Perilous Bounty. Tom, welcome to the program.
Great to be here, Kai.
There's this great line in the book, and by great, I mean terrifying, actually. You say that both of these regions are in a state of palpable and accelerating ecological decline.
Yes. The food system has gotten so big and so powerful and so productive, and I have to admit, so efficient, that it's actually overusing the basic resources that it relies on. And in California, we're seeing subsidence, which is when the ground settles and literally drops, and that messes up bridges and roads and irrigation canals. In the Midwest, they've taken this incredible store of topsoil. It's one of the few, you know, giant prairie regions in the world that has incredible soil. And the farming there is actually eroding that soil at rates way, way faster than it can be replaced naturally.
You know, there was a story on another public radio program the other day. Okay, it was a morning edition. That's fine. About investors buying up small farms and it becoming a rent-seeking opportunity, along with agribusiness as a huge part of it. How does that affect a solution to this, which would seem to me to be some kind of paradigm change?
Yeah, so I don't find that to be a hopeful development. Basically, what it does is it treats the land like a commodity. And if you're not thinking necessarily about passing on to the next generation, but you're thinking more about, let's say, making the most money over the next 10 or 15 years, then it's very probable that you're going to stick to a system that generates loads and loads of commodities, but might not be great for the topsoil. You know, society has a stake in what happens to this land. The way that the land is treated affects how clean the water is that comes off of it and goes downstream into other people's wells and drinking water systems. And putting it in charge of these big corporations and financial institutions, you know, could be a very scary thing, I think.
All right. So let's talk solutions here then, right? And let me go to the subtitle of this book. The book is called Perilous Bounty, The Looming Collapse of American Farming and How We Can Prevent It. Let's get to that how we can prevent it part. And I want to talk about this thing you say of we need to de-Californify American agriculture. And part of the reason that California works so well, as you said earlier, is that it's so efficient and productive, and thus prices for consumers are cheap. If we de-Californify American agriculture and spread out produce as much as we can, doesn't that mean it's going to cost more for consumers?
Yes, it will certainly cost more for consumers. One thing I always say is that you can't fix the food system without, you know, changing the broader society. So I think we're also going to have better social programs and figure out an economy that doesn't generate quite so many low-income jobs. Ironically enough, most of those low-income jobs are in the food system, meatpacking workers, fast food workers, farm workers. We need to figure out a way to pay those people more in order for us to maintain a robust food supply.
Yeah, so keep going with that. What can I or anybody listening to this interview as an individual consumer do given the scale of agriculture in this economy, right? It's billions and billions and trillions of dollars.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think the conventional answer that there is something to it, and that is vote with your fork and, you know, try to support farmers in your area that are trying to do things right. But I think we have to go a little bit deeper than that because there's a lot of interests that sort of big corporations, seed and pesticide companies, companies like that that have a lot of interest in the current system, really grab the levers of policy in this country. And I think a sort of people power movement is what it's going to take it back.
Tom Philpott covers food and agriculture for Mother Jones. He's the author of a new book. It's called Perilous Bounty, The Looming Collapse of American Farming and How We Can Prevent It. Tom, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for having me, Kai.
We've got an excerpt from Tom's book explaining how California farms in particular became so powerful. Marketplace.org is where that lives. This final note on the way out today, Sumner Redstone of CBS and Viacom and Content is King fame is dead at 97. You might have heard that already. It broke this morning. We had Mr. Redstone on this program back in 2006 when he was still a very cantankerous but relatively young 84 years old. And I asked him what he wanted to happen when he died. We're going to play that for you. Here you go.
One of the things that happens when a family controls a business is that you have to figure out what happens when the founder or the father or the patriarch is no longer around. How do you figure that out?
Well, first, I'm intending to be around forever, but naturally you have to build a structure so that if you should by any remote possibility pass away, there are others to take your place.
The man was 84 years old when we did that interview, and I swear to you, I thought he was going to lean across the coffee table and smack me. Okay, we're going, but first, a note of economic context in which being a central banker does not seem to be all that hard. Eric Rosengren, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston, gave a speech today in which he said, and this is a quote, "We must get the virus under control in order for a sustainable economic recovery to take hold." I mean, we knew that, right? Didn't we know that? I knew that. Our media production team includes Robin Edgar, Drew Jostad, Jeff Peters, Daniel Ramirez, J.C. Bold, Charlton Thorpe, Ben Tolliday, and Becca Weinman. Once again, if this is a Wednesday, they're the ones going into the studios, so we don't have to. I'm Kai Rizdal. We'll see you tomorrow. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.